Is there a definition of a perfect painting?
No. Next.
Hello, everybody, and we are back with episode 38 of Art Juice. And this is going to be a slightly different episode. We've got all our usual gubbins, but we're also going to share some of our favourite books with you. Now, some of these might be artist books or business direction books or really just general life philosophy books. But we just thought that that would be a nice thing to discuss. Always when we get into conversations about books, I love hearing other people's book recommendations. So we're going to talk about some here on the podcast today. And we've also got a little gift for you. We've made a really nice PDF which includes some of these and other ones that we think we're not going to have time to talk about today. So if you're out and about listening and you're wondering, you've got to scribble down notes or write titles, you don't have to. You can go to the show notes or you can come and find the page on each of our websites. So that's louisefletcherart.com or my website, alicesheridan.com. And there will be a PDF which you can download. No email required. We're just going to give it to you so that you don't have to scribble and write notes. How's that?
That sounds reasonable.
Jolly good. Bookworm library moment. How has your week been? What have you been working on, Louise?
It's been a bit mad. Do you know when you go away for a few days? So your workshop last week, seems like 3 days away makes 3 weeks worth of extra work when you come back. So I just seem to be scrambling from one thing to another. I have lots of different things on the go. And also, as you get older, I'm realizing you have more and more appointments for maintenance type things. So I have to go see someone about my feet. And now I've got a dentist appointment tomorrow. And all these things just take up time that when you're young, you just have all that time because everything just works the way it's supposed to. And I imagine this just gets worse and worse because my mum seems to spend her whole life in hospitals. You know, she's not ill or anything, but there's just always something getting checked out.
Yeah.
So, but in between that, I've been planning and choosing a new garden building studio razzmatazz thingy, and it's all very exciting. But it's very exciting and very disconcerting all at the same time. Do you know those feelings?
Yeah.
It's like, it's very exciting, but oh, there's going to be all this mess and all this stuff to sort out and timing and winter's coming in. So you're partly excited. So last night I couldn't sleep for thinking about like, where would I put everything and how will it be arranged and will I have extra windows and will I put in skylights and all that stuff. And then partly I'm just, you know, oh, this is going to be a nightmare. And then this morning the guy who's going to put it up said sink. He never said anything about wanting a sink.
Oh.
I said, I did say I wanted a sink. I was very clear that I need a sink. Oh, well, that's going to be it. Oh, I don't know. So now there's all sorts of conversations about drainage and where that can go. And
yeah.
But anyway, it is exciting, but it's just that up and down of something new, I think.
It's funny, I was talking about this. I had a visit this morning from Pauline Jans. Hi, Pauline, who's over from Canada to the UK. And you know, one of the things we were talking about is actually, do you know what? With almost anything in life, if you knew at the beginning of something what the full journey was going to entail, moving house, going on holiday, having children, building your career as an artist, any of it, I said, you know what, I would probably just stay in bed as a gibbering wreck under my duvet. You wouldn't do any of it if you really knew the full picture of anything at the beginning.
No,
but and that's the problem, is that now you've got experience and you know that you
should.
So you can anticipate it.
That's what I was going to say. So the older you get, so when I was 24 and said, oh, let's just go live in Canada, it'll be fine. And I hadn't planned anything. That's because I didn't have a clue what could go wrong. But now at my age, I can see everything that can go wrong.
Yeah.
And I have the world's most pessimistic builder, so he can see even more things that could go wrong. So I'm just going to have to tune out the worry and let that be his worry.
Do you know what the answer with him is, though? So I have met this guy now, having been in Louise's house, and he basically is fueled on biscuits. So maybe he just needs Jaffa cakes or
yeah. Well, he's fueled on biscuits and misery. He just likes being a bit miserable. So I think this is going to keep him going for quite a while.
Yeah, you just need to up your biscuit game.
Yeah, exactly. So what have you been doing this week?
Well, I had a lovely day on Monday, which I'm going to talk about at the end in what's inspired. But again, that kind of threw my week out, and I've been a day off all week as the result of that. But I did go over to the studio and I was doing DIY things, and I just thought, you know what, I'm actually going to take some time in this space to do what it's finally intended for. You know, I've got to ease myself in gently, but I need to make this mine. And I just sat and I took some of the time and the papers and the images that we created on the workshop last week and just did some very small amount of creation in the new space, which was very nice. I'm not rushing. I'm not feeling like I'm under any pressure to get anything done in there. But it was nice to finally think I'm on the edge of actually doing what this space is intended for. And then yesterday, I basically spent a long time on Instagram because I kind of took up the baton of what's a post that I saw somebody else do in stories that basically said, I will repost an image from anybody's profile if you respond to this post. Which I didn't really think through, did I?
Yeah, I saw it was starting to get a bit like, oh my God, she's got another one.
Oh, there's quite a lot in there. But interestingly, so like, I don't know, who knows what's going on with Instagram algorithms. They're much more complicated than we think. And also, I think from a viewer point of view, it starts to get a little bit boring if it's like the same, the same, the same, the same. And I could see that story views were getting fewer and fewer, which is not, The whole intention of it really was to share other people's artwork, introduce them to a new audience, and then hopefully people would pass that on, that sharing. So other people would discover new accounts and follow. So when it started to get cut off, I thought, I will save that. So I've screenshotted and I will come back to it later over time, because I do enjoy sharing other people's work, but all on one day perhaps was just too much for Instagram and too much for me. Right, on to the main topic for today, which is sharing books that we would like to recommend. Now, these aren't just art picture books. There's a whole range here. And we actually found it really hard to choose. And so we're going to be talking about some of them, and there will be a full range that will be available for you to download from either of our websites. So you'll find a link to those in the show notes. So if you're listening on the go, you don't need to make notes. You can just listen and enjoy and then come back and find them later. So we are going to kick off. I am going to ask Louise first for your first book recommendation. What have you got?
Okay, so this one might seem slightly strange because it's a marketing book, but I think of it as both a business book and an art book, and it's called Purple Cow, and it's by Seth Godin, and I could pick any one of his books and genuinely recommend any of them. He is a true genius, not the Donald Trump kind of stable genius, but an actual genius. And he talks about in this book the fact that in the past you could sell things, average things, to average people by advertising them on television and reaching lots of people, and some percentage would go buy your average thing. But that as the world has got busier, as everybody can reach people with their product or service, or in our case, their art, you have to make whatever you're selling so much more remarkable. And the title Purple Cow comes from the idea that if you were driving past fields and fields of cows, you would just eventually stop noticing the cows. But if all of a sudden a purple cow was in the field, you would say, hey, look at that purple cow. And his idea is that a product, in this case, our art, has to be remarkable in order for it to take off. And remarkable simply means worth making a remark about.
Right.
And I just love that idea because I always felt like I'm not selling enough art when I was struggling, I would feel like I'm not selling enough. And there are courses you can take that promise to help you sell your work. But I kept thinking, yeah, but I don't think it's good enough. I think the problem is the art, not my marketing skills.
Yeah.
And so I just really love this idea. And it's stuck with me now, marketing courses as well, making things so good that somebody wants to tell somebody else about them is the core of this book. And it's a really small, little, easy to read book, but really powerful.
But I think also being clear on how your work is kind of different or identifiable. I mean, we are re-recording this because the first one disappeared. So I've just come back from an art fair, and I met somebody there who's an artist friend of mine, and she does these beautiful Dutch oil paintings, and she was the only person at this art fair selling work anything like that. And I think as a result she probably had a better fair than perhaps other people did in that location, because there was nobody else doing similar. There was nobody for her to compare her with. And I think actually when it comes to making art, if we can create work in a way that's almost impossible for anybody else to do the same thing.
Yeah.
That's a really good key to it, isn't it?
And I actually heard him being interviewed the other day on an old interview, Seth Godin, and he said he was being asked about artists, in particular visual artists, how can you sell more work? And he said, you have to make it remarkable to a group of people who want that. And the interviewer said, well, what if you just want to do your own thing and you don't want to care about an audience? And he said, well, then you just better hope you're lucky that somebody wants it. But actually, the reality is that we live in a world where it needs to be remarkable to a certain group of people if you want to make a living from it. If you want to starve in a garret, you can do something that's unremarkable or, you know, because so weird that nobody would ever want to have anything to do with it. But that's not how you're actually going to make a living.
Yeah.
And I like that practical streak.
Yeah. And I think that's why books like this that are kind of business books in inverted commas, but not directly business, can be really helpful as artists, because it's more about just challenging your thinking and changing the way you think about things than it is following a kind of, you know, business automated system. Right. I haven't read that one from him, so I will enjoy that. Okay. My first recommendation for you then is, again, it's not an art picture book. It's a book of writings, kind of hybrid writings. It's inspiring, it's personal. Many of you may have read it already, but if you haven't, I highly, highly, highly recommend. It's called Clear Seeing Place, and it's by Brian Ruttenberg. And I read it and then went off to look up his work and clicked away very quickly, because his work isn't entirely for me. And I didn't want that to affect how I felt about this book. So if you're going to Google him, I suggest you read the book and then have a look at his work, because it's not about whether you connect with his visual language. I think that there are so many lovely stories, and the way that he just kind of talks about work, the process of making it, how it fits into our lives, the difference between working and showing. It's a book that you can dip into, or you can read very happily cover to cover. And there are some a couple of parts that I just want to take out of this. And I think this story is really nice. He was talking about a street in San Francisco that is cobbled, apparently. And as a result, you have to really slow down and take your time when you go down it. You can't rush, you can't race. And this is a theme that kind of recurs a little bit in this book. Time. It doesn't matter where you got it, only where you take it. Be clumsy. Real artists take Lombard. And just this, I thought that was a really nice way of saying, don't rush. Take your time. It's about encouraging you to find your personal journey with your work, and just basically how we respond to that as we go along. And particularly interesting thoughts about landscapes as well, way we interpret landscape. So I love that. There's one that's got lots of pencil markings in.
He he has videos on YouTube, which I've watched a few of, and they're really interesting. I think he might have taken some of the book from the videos, or he might just generally talk about the same things. But I think he's up to about 70 or 80 of these videos now. And sometimes he just mixes paint and shows you colour mixing, and sometimes he just talks, rambles on about something, and sometimes he shares what he's doing. And they're not high production value and they're not pretentious. But what I like about it is he is, and actually on the videos, you can't really see his work because it's always kind of just in the background. I don't really know what it looks like, but I do know that he's very successful in New York, which is extremely difficult to be successful as an artist in New York. So he definitely sounds like someone worth listening to. He knows what he's talking about.
It's very encouraging as well. That's why I like it. It's gentle but encouraging. Yeah. Gives you enough drive without kind of scaring you off and making you think, oh, I could never do this.
Yeah, and he never in his videos comes across as, oh, I'm a highfalutin New York artist with galleries, and he never comes across that way. He just comes across as really down to earth.
Okay, so that's number two. So I'm coming back to you now. So what's your next book for us?
Okay, so my book is also encouraging in a different way. This is a book lots of people may have read. It's called Letters to a Young Poet by Rainer Maria Rilke. And I'm realizing, by the way, that what with my project of interpreting poetry into paintings and by now choosing this book, it makes me sound like some kind of poetry expert. This is the extent of my poetry knowledge, is these two people. And I don't even know this guy's poems. So Letters to a Young Poet, what is a collection of letters by this poet, I think he's in the 1800s, called Rainer Maria Rilke, a German poet who apparently had become fairly well known in poetry circles and would receive letters from young poets asking for advice. And this particular poet called Franz Kappos, who was 19, wrote to Rilke asking for advice, and they had a correspondence, quite sporadic, but it went on for quite a few years. And when Rilke died, in this book, he left out all his own letters. So all you get is Rilke's letters to him. And so what you get is a collection of advice to a young poet, but it would apply to any kind of art. It really does. It's generally about creativity and life and love. And when I first read them, I assumed that Rilke was an old man when he wrote all this very wise advice, but I subsequently learned that he was actually 29 when his first letter was sent.
Ooh.
So he wasn't an old man at all. I also learned that he apparently was a complete, well, I can't even say what he was, not a very nice person, narcissistic, vain, all sorts of things I read about. So it's very strange that
he took the time.
Yeah, and also that he took the time, and that someone who in real life seemed like no one liked actually had all this really good advice. So I'll just read you the first letter in the book. The poet had written saying, could you tell me if my poems are any good, really? You know, could you give me a critique? And he wrote, you ask whether your poems are good. You send them to publishers. You compare them with other poems. You are disturbed when certain publishers reject your attempts. Well, now, since you have given me permission to advise you, I suggest that you give all that up. You are looking outward, and above all else, that you must not do. No one can advise and help you. No one. There is only one way, which is to go within. Therefore, my dear friend, I know of no other advice than this. Go within and scale the depths of your being from which your very life springs forth. At its source, you will find the answer to the question. And I kind of think that's a nice way of saying, after you've done all that, you'll find out that you're not very good. But at least it was a nice way of saying it, and quite profound.
But maybe he's not saying that. Maybe he's saying, you know, this is the essential truth to writing decent poetry. And, you know, it may be that maybe it's a nice way of saying at the moment that it's not very good.
Yeah.
But once you go on this kind of discovery, that's the only route to getting it to be good.
Yeah.
It's a lovely book. It's really slim. Again, all my books are quite small. I don't know what that says about me, but it's really quick and easy to read, but so much profound, thought-provoking life advice in there. Mind you, I read it first when I was about 20, and I might know a lot of this stuff for myself now, whereas when I was 20, maybe it seemed a lot more profound.
But if it's stuck in your mind for that long?
I love it. I go back to it all the time, so I recommend it.
Okay, because it sounds like it's one of those books that's going to be a book that you can only discover. It's still available?
Yes, yeah, and it's quite well known in creative circles. I don't know how I came across it, but yeah, it's definitely still available.
Do you know if he gave permission to have his letters published, if they were only published
after
he died?
I don't know. I should have researched that too.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So what's your next one?
Right, my next one is a little bit more directly art-related. Again, very hard to choose. I had some that I wanted to share with you that I feel that there isn't really space for here because, you know, books about favourite painters and favourite artists, you know, those can be very personal and different to each of us. And I wanted to share things that almost anybody, no matter what their kind of journey or their subject or their method of working, would find helpful and inspiring. So although this is a painting book about a very by a particular artist about a very particular way of painting, it's a very useful book in many ways. So it's Daily Painting by Carol Marine, and she set out by the reason that I like it is because although it has lots of very practical stuff like colour, setting up, she talks as well about finding a habit that works for you in your current working practice. And she also talks about things like getting into a regular routine. She talks about how she photographs her paintings every day. So it's a really nice mix of practical approach, and there are lots of nice paintings within it as well. It's not my thing, this the kind of still life setup, but I really, you know, I enjoy it. She talks about drawing proportion, perspective, value composition, making things more abstract, you know, wet paint carriers. There's a lot in it for a neat small book. And again, I think that this was one that I found fairly on, and I just like the way that she made painting on a regular basis seem possible, no matter where you were in your setup. And again, I think she has YouTube videos.
Well, I remember her. We talked about this when we recorded it the first time and it didn't take. And I was saying that I remember her from her blog years ago when I was trying to get back into painting and not really succeeding. I found her somehow, and I don't think she had a book then or any videos, but she wrote a blog. And what I took away from her is real inspiration about, I saw her make the daily paintings and then start to sell them. And at first you just clicked a PayPal link and ordered and said you wanted it. And the first one to click got the painting. But then she set up this website with her husband called Daily Paintings. And she started to invite other artists to sell their paintings for a fee on there. And I noticed that she was selling almost everything she made, and they were selling for about $600 at the time a day. And secondly, she now had this other business with him that was bringing in more income. And at one point he designed some kind of little cabinet with lighting in it for still life setups. And then they sold the instructions to that, to how to make it.
That's interesting.
And I just was like, oh, wow, she's really got this sorted out, because she's making a living from this. This is so impressive. So she really stuck in my mind. And I did like her paintings. I never bought one. But they are still lifes, but they're interesting, and the way they're painted, they're a bit funky and a bit different. And so I didn't know she had a book, so I'm definitely going to get that one.
Yeah, they have a lot of, I mean, you can learn a lot, I think, from the colour, the way she uses colour, brush marks, the brush strokes. Yeah. There's a lot of kind of saying a lot with very little, which I think as an abstract artist is quite helpful as well. So yeah, it's not a huge book. It's not a huge, big, heavy hardback. It's very widely available. $22 US, it says on the back of mine, even though I didn't buy it. in US dollars. That must be on UK booksellers as well. So there we go. That's my arty painting one. We are getting through these, aren't we? Now, the first time we did this, we just had the list of all the books that we had, and we were like, oh, I don't know which one to choose next.
Yeah,
I don't know which ones to choose next. I know, but there's some good ones on here. I don't know. Are we going to change our mind, or are you going to stick to your original
list? I'm going to stick to it, but I could throw you off and just say, oh, this one. Well, I thought the same as you. I have tons of art books that I love, but they're generally about a specific artist, and I don't think that's particularly applicable or helpful unless someone else loves the same person as me or has the same interests as me. So, and I don't think there are enough good books written about the process of art making, which is why I'm interested in the Ruttenberg book and the Carol Marine, because I've not read either. So the last one I chose is a real surprise to me in a way, because a few years ago I'd never have chosen a book like this. It's a woo-woo book. And so it's all about mindset rather than about art, but it's changed my approach to my life quite significantly, not as significantly as I would like. Anyway, this book is called The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, and he is not one of those famous speakers who has videos everywhere. He's a very quiet and reserved man. I think he has a few videos on YouTube now, but he's really, this book was the first time I think most people had ever heard of him, and it became a bestseller. And it's woo-woo, but it's so humorous and sensible and down to earth that you almost don't notice that it's woo woo. But it's a book about how,
why are we scared, hang on a minute, why are we scared of woo woo?
Well,
hang on, and for people who don't even know what we're talking about, what do you mean by woo woo?
By woo woo I mean, what do I mean, it's spiritual, it's about not practical things, it's about any minute you think the tarot cards might come out, or there might be astrology, or it's about the soul. It's about things we can't see.
I can't explain, perhaps, although actually there is more and more evidence coming to light.
Exactly, which makes it feel a bit more. Anyway, it's just my objection to that world, but I'm getting better, and I have chosen it as one of three books to mention because it's about how our entire life experience is a choice. And that when we understand that we are not our thoughts, when we step away from our thoughts and just see them as what they are, thoughts and not reality, that we can have a different experience in our lives. And the first time I read that in his book, because he explains it so simply, I was just almost knocked backwards, like, yeah, I do think all these things are true. I do think just because it flitted through my mind, it's actually a fact. And so often it's proved not to be true. And the two things I still remember from it, even without having to go back to it, and still use from it, is the first is he talks about, how would you feel about a friend who gave you the kind of advice that your own thoughts give you, who was wrong as often as your own thoughts are about things. This is going to go wrong. That's going to go wrong. You shouldn't do that because it'll be a disaster. All the things that our thoughts tell us. If you had a friend like that, you would just get rid of them because they'd be so annoying. And also they never shut up. And you'd be like, just shut up and let me be.
Yeah, you're so glum enough already.
Yeah. And so I thought that, and I started to listen to that voice, and that really changes things for you when you actually listen to what it's saying rather than just accepting it all flow by. But the other thing he talked about was, then if you know that, how do you stop those thoughts from overwhelming you? And this was, I read it at a time when I was quite anxious and a little bit depressed. And he talked about how you can lean away from the thoughts, and I'd loved that description. So instead of engaging with the thoughts, so the thought comes up, that person just doesn't care about me, they're mistreating me, you know, or this, I'm going to lose my job, it's going to all go wrong. Instead of like going, yeah, I bet I am, and I should go in and talk to someone and find out what's going on, and da da da. Instead of doing that, you just say that's a thought, and then you just literally lean backwards and stay as far away from the thought as you can.
Is there a thing about saying it out loud?
He doesn't say to say it out loud.
Right.
I've heard Paul McKenna says to say it out loud in a funny voice. That's funny to do.
Yeah.
So you do it in like Donald Duck voice or something.
Yeah. Because there is something about saying things out loud that make them, that do automatically put them into perspective, or you make them think like, is that really true, that thing that I just said? How much do I actually believe that?
That is true. His thing was just about, just lean away from it. And I remember a couple of times in particular when I did that, when something was really upsetting me. Can't remember what the something was now, but I remember the experience of leaning backwards and sitting quietly, leaning away from the thoughts, and then going so far away from them that they kind of shrunk into a tiny pinprick. And it felt like there was this whole massive universe and this tiny little thing. And suddenly it was just hilarious to me that this thing was even worrying, because it was so ridiculously small. But I've only been able to do that a couple of times. I think that's something that if you practiced, you really could train yourself to do about almost anything. But anyway, those two things really, it just changed everything for me. And it might seem really obvious to people who've already understand that their thoughts are not their reality, but for me at the time, it was overwhelming. And he has another book, which I highly recommend, I'm cheating, called The Surrender Experiment. Cheating. And in that book, he spent a year surrendering to whatever happened in his life, and some crazy stuff happened, and he didn't object. Even when squatters arrived on his land and built themselves some houses, because he owns a lot of land out in the wilds in America, he just let them on and helped let them start a church on his property, and all sorts of weird things happened, and he ended up becoming a multimillionaire software businessman.
That sounds like a kind of good version of the Dice Man.
No.
The Dice Man novel by Luke Reinhardt, where he takes no personal responsibility. He gives the dice options and he rolls and he does whatever the dice says, including nasty things.
Oh, no, he didn't do anything nasty.
Okay, he just let things happen without trying to control them.
Yeah.
That's a different thing. It's interesting that you bring that up though, because I also had, when I was kind of going through my bookshelves and pulling out books that that I wanted to talk about, I also had one which sounds as though it's a little bit heavier weight. It wasn't a particularly hard read, but it does get into the nitty-gritty. It's called Choice Theory by William Glasser. But it sounds as though it's along very similar lines. So I'll put that in too, if anybody kind of likes to go deeper into the whys and wherefores of things. So there we go. Two about making choices. Interesting.
So right. Now it's time for your last one. Mm. Are you going to change your mind? Or are you going to stick with the first one?
Well, I was bringing them all in here. There's one that I really want to talk about, but I think that will have to wait for the PDF, because it's not quite so relevant to art making. So I'm going to stick with my original choice, which is called Essentialism by Greg McKeown. And the subtitle is The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. And it is a business book. I think I'm pretty sure I found it in the business section. But it's again a really nice broad picture book with lots of kind of practical advice as well. So it's all about discernment, making better decisions, the big stuff, you know, the idea of, you know, what to do if you're feeling busy but not productive, if you feel that you're stretched too thin, constantly in motion but never really getting anywhere. But again, it's quite gentle. It doesn't just say, oh, just cut all these things out and say no. It helps you sort of define what is important to you long term in your life, and practically, you know, how you can bring that in. And the thing that I really like about it is, if you look through the contents page, through the different parts, so it's divided into four parts: essence, explore, eliminate, and execute. So there's some digging involved at the beginning, the idea of exploration, and in the elimination stage, clarifying, dare, uncommit, edit, limit. Lots of these things are things that apply to making art as well. So I think it's a really nice crossover between how we manage our time, what we do, how we make bigger decisions about how we think about life, and then, you know, actually putting this into practice. And again, this is one that has lots of corners folded down and pencil lines. I used to be a real book purist, and if I had a book, I would keep it as sacrosanct and precious book. And I don't do that anymore. And I don't buy these kind of books on Kindle either. I like to buy these kind of books as hard copies, because once you've read them once, if you want to go back to them again, very often I find I don't need to go back and read them cover to cover. I can go back and I can just dip into certain sections. And if I have folded the corners and circled and underlined bits that were appropriate to me, I can almost just flick through and read just one section at a time easily. And I know you can highlight and things on the Kindle, but it's not the same for me as actually picking something off and randomly finding something. And invariably it opens at a page that you think, yeah, good, I'm glad I knew that today.
Mm-hmm.
So I like those kind of books in hard copy. Novels I'm quite happy to read on Kindle, but these kind of books, yeah, I like to hold them, yeah, in my hand.
Yes, I agree with that, actually.
So that's our six that we've presented to you. If you want to find more, you can come and find them through the link on the show notes, or my website, alicesheridan.com, has a podcast section, and Louise's website is louisefletcherart.com, which also has a podcast section, and there will be a link. So the PDF that we're going to put together has got a summary of all these books and more. There are at least the same number again, and that is just available to you. You don't need to give us your email or anything, because we haven't worked out the tech how to do that. We're just hopefully the PDF's just going to be there so that you can download it to save you making notes. And on to our listener question, which comes from Libby Sims Art on Instagram, who gives us a really nice, easy one. She says, what's the definition of a perfect painting, and how as artists can we know our work is good? I look at some things I post on Instagram and then curl my toes. So, how do we react to this? Is there a definition of a perfect painting?
No. Next.
Oh, I love it. I knew this when we had to do this again. I thought, I bet our answer is going to be totally different today.
Well, it's just...
But it won't be really, will it? Come on.
No. I mean, obviously there can't be an objective perfect painting, you know, judged by everyone in the world, because we'd all have different definitions of what that is. And even for ourselves, I don't think we could ever attain the perfect painting, partly because we continually change and improve. So even if we felt like, wow, I've done it, that's a perfect painting.
And where would you go then?
Yeah, but then a few weeks later, wouldn't you be doing something better? Or perhaps you'd just have given up, like, right, I've done it, that's perfect, I never have to do anything else.
Okay, so maybe the question then is, how as artists can we know our work is good? Or even perhaps, how as artists can we look at our work and both appreciate what we can do well and also identify what we would like to do better? Do you think that's part of the question here?
Yeah, I do. Well, the wording of the question, I think that's what I would like to answer.
Right.
I almost feel like the wording of the question says, how can I know our work is good? So it's almost like there's this feeling that if I put it out there in the world, there'll be this group of judges who know what's good and bad, and they'll know it's not good, even though I think it might be. So how do I know it's good before I share it with other people? How do I know it's objectively good? And I think that's impossible. I think the question you asked is, it's more internal. How do you know it's good if you feel it's the best you can do, is my answer to that. If you feel you didn't just go, yeah, it's good enough, I'll do another one and sell that one.
Yeah, there's a confidence thing to it, isn't it? As well as, you know, how can we know that our work is good in the sense that wanting that reassurance that it's going to be well received, before we share it, because we all know it's very vulnerable and it can feel very exposing to put artwork out there. And, you know, we don't always get the feedback and the response that we want when we share our art. And I think, you know, that is one of the tough things about being an artist, is that, you know, there isn't a single definition of a perfect painting, that there isn't a checklist where you've done everything right and therefore it will be good. It's just not how it works. So a huge part of it is understanding that when you're making the kind of work you want to make, to an extent, we can't be reliant on how it affects others, while understanding that for many of us, when we see the impact it has on other people, or we see the response that our work gets from other people, that is a huge source of satisfaction and is very gratifying. I mean, you know, it feels lovely when people appreciate what you do. Nobody's going to say, put it out there and, you know, rock on blindly and wildly, you know, and everybody can take a barrage of criticism and you can still charge on feeling good about it. Because, you know, if you could do that, you'd probably be some kind of egotistical maniac. You know, we are all a little bit fragile. I think we are sensitive when we put our work out there. So then it becomes, the only way that you can do that is to almost like create your own sets of criteria and judgment for yourself. Yes. So you're looking at the stage that you're at, is my work good by what markings? And some of that is ideas, some of it is skill, some of it is the execution. And I think by identifying those parts, that can help you know what you want to work on next. So it might be that you look at perhaps a group of work that you've done and you think, you know what, next time my color mixing was a little bit sloppy, everything feels a little bit the same, and next time I really want to investigate that more, or next time I really need to look at the draftsmanship of my drawing a bit more, or when I was talking about this work, it felt like I didn't really have a reason for doing it. So that's something I need to spend a little bit more time on. Does that make any of your work less or more good? I don't know, but I think it gives you direction, which is really important.
Yeah. And I think direction and intention are so important in this, because how can you measure if it's good unless you know what you wanted it to be? Or what you wanted to achieve with it. So if I want to achieve with this work I'm doing now, I want to achieve a real feeling of emotion in the work. That might mean being looser with my paint than might be considered skillful by somebody else.
Yeah.
Because that I want to get in that energy and emotion and feeling into it. So if it gets judged by someone else who values skill and traditional painting approaches, they might say, well, that's rubbish. Mm. My only way of knowing if it's good is, do I feel like I got that thing in that I wanted to get in?
Yep.
And while I agree with you, none of us could withstand a barrage of criticism, it genuinely is water off a duck's back to me that lots of people don't like the way I paint.
Yeah. Because you're so clear.
Because I know what I want to do, and because I know some people like that. And I'm not expecting to ever have the whole world say, well, that's perfect. You know, that nobody's ever going to make a painting like that again. That's it. It's done. I just want to convey one small thing to one group of people. And I think that's where it's so important to know what it is you're trying to do, so you can judge for yourself whether you're getting there or not.
Wouldn't it be fun though to have, what's the definition of what's your perfect painting? And I think, didn't we have before, we had a question, something about is something enough, and being able to judge things. And there was a question about how many cigarettes a day is too many. And if you ask a group of people that, somebody would say, you know, the amount would vary enormously. I bet if you said, what's your perfect painting, to 100 people, you would get 100 different paintings in response back again, because everybody's going to have such a different view of what they like, what they consider to be special, well executed, exciting, emotional, you know, whatever it is. There is no one solution to this. Maybe we should do that. That would be quite fun, wouldn't it? Maybe we should do that as a post when this episode comes out. Right. Okay. Get thinking.
Maybe
everybody.
Maybe we'd be surprised and there'd be a clear winner and everyone would agree.
Well, okay. So we're going to try that. So when this episode comes out, where should we do it? On our Facebook pages.
Yes. Okay.
Right. Okay. On our two things to do then. We're going to keep you busy this episode. So come to our Facebook page and share an image of what your perfect painting is. Not the ones that you've done, but your idea of a perfect painting that already exists out there in the world. And then you've got the book PDF to download. Okay, let's move on. Okay, to finish up then, what's your inspiration come from this week?
This week from the students on my course. So we're in week six. Module six, we actually take 7 weeks to get here because we have rest weeks, but we're a few weeks from the end now. There are 8 modules in all, and people are beginning to have real breakthroughs where they realize something about the way they've always wanted to work, or they realize something they really care about, or they make something that they love for the first time, or in some cases they realize what's been holding me back is that my relationship with one of my parents and the way they treated me when I was young. Or there's so many different breakthroughs that happen. But there was one, for example, just happened today, where somebody said, you know, I've been going through years of my life thinking I want to paint landscape because I like being in the countryside. But then I realized today, I like being in the countryside, but I love being in the city. I love the urban environment, and that's what I want to paint. I don't want to paint bucolic scenes. Yeah. And she then did this abstract cityscape, and she's so excited about this new direction because all of a sudden she's got something to explore. And that's what I love about this. It's that there's so many mental blocks to us just doing whatever the thing is that we actually love. So many times that we think we should love something else, so we're doing that, and we're not even aware that we're doing it until you really start digging in. But I find the excitement when you discover that thing to be really inspirational, and it keeps me excited and motivated about doing this again next year, because it is a lot of work. And sometimes, you know, you could, if you weren't seeing results, you could be kind of, oh, I've got to do this and I've got to do that and I've got to answer all these emails and I've got to respond to all these Facebook posts. But it doesn't feel that way because it's so exciting to see what's happening.
It is.
So my lovely students are my inspiration.
Big reasons why. Well, mine's similar in some ways, in that on Monday, so I just got back from the workshop and I turned back round again and drove back up on Monday to go to a business event by somebody who teaches about launching. And I almost didn't go because I haven't launched anything, in the sense that the Connected Artist Club, you know, I had an idea of where I wanted to go this year, and I thought that I would be opening it up again in September and I'd be doing a public launch. And the places were filled by students who'd come out of CVP with me, and that's enough. And I want to be very careful about how I grow that, because what's important to me is very much like what you're talking about, is that there is the individual space for people to have time to recognize where they want to go, and it's not a big system. And what I like about this lady at this event, and the reason that I went, was she attracts people to her who are doing business because they really want to make a difference. And she says she wants to be the number one in this area, not because she wants to be number one in terms of finance, but because if she knows that she gets that recognition, that will have changed the way people start to think about business. And it won't all be about numbers and statistics and funnels and people coming through. It will be about people genuinely creating something and making contact with people who they know they can help. And people at this event were doing all sorts of amazing things. So, you know, there was one guy, I think he was in his early 70s or late 60s, and he's just launched an online course for a group of people who have retired. And there were people doing just really interesting things. And it was just a lovely day to come away from, having been in a space with people who want to work that way in the world. And it's funny, that's often how I choose who I want to work with. And I think listening to your gut in that way can be a really strong key for what's right for you. Again, other areas where business, art, living, life all kind of cross over and they have to kind of coincide. So that was my inspiration this week. Well done, everybody who did things in that. So we hope you've enjoyed this slightly different episode. I guess as well, when we share this, if you've got other books that you would like to recommend to people, you know, that would be great. I know that a while ago on my Instagram, I did a post about artist book recommendations, and there were some really interesting ones for that. So again, I'll make sure I put the link to that in the show notes. But keep an eye out for where we share this then on social media. Add your book recommendations. We hope you enjoy some of ours. Thank you so much for sharing this. This might be a great episode to share out to others. And we've loved having you with us, and we will see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.